it's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 323 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great conversation with Jeff Weber, the creator of a series of young adult books that are called The Scientists. And part one is going through a Kickstarter right now. It's called The Prodigies, and it's the beginning of an extended storyline that I think you're going to enjoy. Jeff uses some different art techniques and a different art style to tell this story, which I think really helps meet my need for variety. We talk about the different characters and about how this book particularly came to be, as well as what we might find coming our way from Jeff in the future. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
12 student prodigies. One national science fair. No chance of survival. The experiment has begun.
It's great to be talking today with Jeff Weber, a co-creator on a really interesting young adult book called The Scientists. And part one has a Kickstarter going right now. How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. I've read the press kit about The Scientists, and I'm kind of fascinated about it. You're a co-creator, but you mostly do the art. Do you guys work together? I mean, what's the name of the other fellow you're working with?
Trent Beckett was the gentleman I co-created with. Mm-hmm. And previous to this, we had collaborated on various screenwriting projects.
Hmm. Is there anything we might know that you've done?
Nothing that made it to the big screen.
Not yet anyway, I guess. We'll just keep going and hoping that it happens. So okay, then why comics? Is it because it's a visual medium? Is that why you guys decided to do The Scientists as a comic?
I had been doing comics sort of as an independent artistic pursuit, and I had thought that The Scientists would be very well suited for this particular medium. In the comic creating projects that I'd been doing with my friends that dates really back to when I was much younger in high school, mm-hmm. And then we kept going on and into our 20s and so forth. And the creation of The Scientists actually kind of goes back to this anthology comic that I had been doing with my friends called Strange Tales from Spooktown. Mm-hmm. And the very first one we made sort of as the whole print-on-demand revolution was kind of kicking into gear and mm-hmm. people were discovering that they didn't need to have a comic publisher contract to make their own comic. Mm-hmm. So we did that as a print-on-demand, and all of us that had just been drawing comics, you know, in our notebooks and stuff, suddenly had this outlet to do a professional-looking comic, and it was great. We were so excited. We had all this momentum, but then I wanted to keep the momentum going, and some of my friends wanted to keep the momentum going, so we wanted to do follow-ups. We wanted to release part two, and as it happened, you know, not everybody was quite as committed. Certain deadlines were missed, and to cut a long story short, I had a book that had to, in order to have it back in time to take it to the convention that we had a table at, mm-hmm. I had to get it to the printer that night. Mm. And I was about 4 pages short of what I needed mm-hmm. in order to have a full comic. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for what I could do to just fill some space. Mm-hmm. And I had this script going, script that I hadn't done yet, that would have been about a 4-page script. And I thought maybe just as like a joke, I could do it just with Sharpie and stick figures mm-hmm. and just crank something out just to fill in the 4 pages. But then I had a little flash of inspiration, and I had a paintbrush and some acrylic paint. And I realized that if I just working very quick with a paintbrush and acrylic paint, I could go just as fast as if I was doing it with Sharpie, but then it might look like it was more of like an artistic choice instead of just mm-hmm. a joke. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I was done and I had looked at what I had created, I was actually kind of happy with the results. It was, believe me, it was very rough looking. It didn't, mm-hmm. it didn't look like anything more than it was, which was just something that had been slapped together, but mm-hmm. it had a kind of unique aesthetic to it that I kind of liked. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of tucked this away as a tool in my tool belt that I might want to pull out for a later use. And I started thinking, as I was looking for what projects I would do down the road, I was thinking that it might be nice to take on a bigger project. Mm-hmm. And using this, I was kind of calling it fast painting. Using this mm-hmm. fast painting technique, I was thinking that, you know, gee, if I did 4 pages in one sitting, if I just do that every night, I could do a whole graphic novel in like a couple months. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So my writing partner, Trent Beckett, and I, we'd already written a bunch of screenplays. Mm-hmm. So when I'm trying to think of what ideas to do next, one of the good places to look is to see what ideas you've already got in the bank, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I had this screenplay that we'd written called The Scientists mm-hmm. That we had just finished earlier that year. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would work great as a comic in comic form. So I pitched it to him about doing it in a, you know, it would require a little bit of adaptation, but not much. Mm-hmm. And then I do it in this sort of fast painting technique. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have a graphic novel to show. Well, I learned a few things along the way as I was mm-hmm. doing it. I learned that the frenetic energy that I had that very first time when I was doing that fast painting thing, that's not really sustainable over mm-hmm. a long project. Mm-hmm. Things kind of even out over time, and it actually fast painting just ends up just becoming painting. Mm-hmm. And wasn't really saving me any time over traditional methods mm-hmm. as other things in life came along. You know, the germination on time it was taking to create this was going longer and longer mm-hmm. on the way. I was, I was recently married. My wife was pregnant. And mm. so along the way I had a baby. Mm. And then I was started going to grad school, mm. Changed careers to become a teacher. Had more babies. Mm-hmm. I'm up to 4 now.
Wow.
So just all these little things just made this project, you know, having to keep going on the shelf, but I always felt this urge to keep going back to it because I really was fond of the story, but I kind of ended up transitioning to like a more traditional art technique. So that way I could get more of like the kind of the detail and the precision that I was looking for.
Mm-hmm. Now I see in the information you have a news release that's out. Your writing partner, Trent Beckett, he passed actually in 2007.
He did. Yeah. That was really devastating for me, for everybody who knew him. But one of the things that I found was I found that by continuing to work on this, it sort of helped me to feel like a connection to him, you know? So like, I'm still, every day that I'm working on this, I'm still reading his words. I'm still remembering the, you know, the comments that he made. So it was kind of like a way to kind of keep him alive in my memories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was also just something that I thought that seeing this finished would have made him happy. So it was sort of something that I kind of did as sort of like a promise to myself, like to get this thing done.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, that's there have been other creative teams, and one of them has gotten lost. And the other person doing the project just kind of is, on many levels, they feel connected to the person that they've lost. I think that's, you know, that's a great thing to for his memory, and his memory continues to live on as you do the book.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's one of the pieces of him that I have left. So it's kind of like the way that I can kind of keep him alive, not only for myself, but for the rest of the world as well.
Mm. Wow. Now, you're in the middle of a Kickstarter right now. It started March 9th, and it's going to go till April 10th. Mm-hmm. And let's see, I haven't looked it up to see. Let me take a look, see where we're at here. Now, we're recording this a little bit ahead of time, so it may be, okay, well, you're more than halfway there. In fact, it looks like you're 2/3 way at this point. By the time this comes out, you might have gotten your money all set to go.
I hope so. We're closing in on the 3/4 mark. Okay. And, you know, if we can hit the funding goal early, I have some I have some cool stretch goals that I might like to implement, although I'm a little bit of a, you know, don't count my chickens before I hatch guy. So I'm not putting those on the Kickstarter page until we actually get there.
Okay. Is this your first Kickstarter, or have you done others in the past?
This is my very first Kickstarter, so I'm really going all in on this one. I'm like throwing every idea I have, every kind of creative idea. I put together a soundtrack to go with it. Mm-hmm. I have a 3D variant cover. I got a diorama, mm-hmm. do-it-yourself diorama. Mm-hmm.
You've got video. Wow, just everything you can in there. You know, everything, including the kitchen sink, looks like it's going in there.
Yeah, include everything, including the lab sink.
Yeah. So, by the way, to find this on Kickstarter, you go The Scientist's YA Young Adult Course, Adventure of Prodigies in Peril.
Yeah, well, the easier URL for your listeners to type in is scientistcomic.com/Kickstarter.
Oh, okay, now we get them there. Now, let me read the description real quick of what the story is about, because I want to get into that and the characters a little bit. A young genius and his fellow prodigies are kidnapped on their way to a science fair and must use their wits to escape, which is interesting. And, of course, I don't want to give away parts of the plot or anything like that. But I'm kind of interested. Talk about I think the main character is Chin, is his last name?
Stuart Chin, yeah, that's the main character.
And he's a little on the shy side, my understanding. You know, sometimes with scientists, there are gradations, you know, within the certain levels of how they think and how they act. But, you know, Tyler is exactly what I imagine many young scientists to be. Very devoted, but on the other hand, he's kind of withdrawn and stuff. And he actually does something in there to impress a girl, which I thought was kind of fun. Can you talk about Tyler, where he comes from? Because he's being an
Stuart.
I'm sorry. Stuart, an Oriental. Chris, it's a good choice, because usually the main character in a comic is not an Oriental guy. So I always like to see something a little different, that you're making a bold choice there with that.
Yeah. His father's Chinese, although he wasn't born in China. He was born in Texas, mm-hmm. but he speaks Chinese, and there's actually sequences, like a dream sequence, for example, where mm-hmm. his father is speaking to him in Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. Kind of. Did you have to research that, or is that something you happen to know?
I actually did that with Google Translate, and I recently had a coworker that's actually is fluent in Chinese that just sort of gave me some advice on how I could maybe make it a little bit more correct.
Okay.
So make it a little bit more forceful. Like he said, like what I wrote wasn't wrong, mm-hmm. but it wasn't necessarily as dramatically worded as I had intended it to be.
Okay.
So he gave me an alternate way to write it. So it will only mean anything to people that actually can read Chinese, mm-hmm. but just for my own
gratification,
I'm going to change it to his recommendation. I don't speak Chinese. Yeah. Although my wife is Thai, so I do speak a tiny little bit of Thai.
Okay, it begs the question, where did you get this character from? Is he based on anybody you know? Is he coming out of your imagination? How'd you get him?
Well, this is collectively between Trent Beckett, my co-writer, and I. I think he's sort of a little bit of both of us. He's got elements of both of us in there. The love of science and going to science fairs, that's something that I definitely had within me. I love science. My father was a scientist. Mm. I grew up doing science projects and going to science fairs, and that was always a big part of my schooling.
Mm-hmm.
The very original pitch for this whole story, if you were to trace it back to before the screenplay was even written, Trump had pitched to me after we'd seen this little video my friend had made. Mm-hmm. This was back in the early 2000s. There was this little movie making game called The Movies, where you could create your own characters and create your own little movies. Mm-hmm. And he had made this video. I think they call it like machinima, mm-hmm. where you take like video game assets to make movies out of it.
Right, right. I've seen that. There was a Star Trek one of those, I think. that I saw. So yeah, I remember that.
So he had made this machinima using the assets from this game, The Movies, where all the characters were sort of based, modeled to look like my friends and I. Mm-hmm. And there was a scene where my I was waking up inside of this like sort of scientific compound in a space suit. Mm-hmm. And Trent really was captivated by the whole premise of like, oh, somebody waking up in a spacesuit and it being like a mystery. This was at the time that that TV show Lost was coming out. Mm. We were both big into Lost. Mm. We loved like those kind of mystery setups and things that end on cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. So he had pitched to me taking that sort of premise of people waking up in spacesuits and not knowing how they are. And the premise would be that they were going to be some of the world's greatest scientists that are being abducted and held captive. Mm. He said maybe they're in a hotel in the Midwest or some base in the Arctic, but that might be too James Bondish. Mm-hmm. He had pitched all the characters. There was going to be, you know, the scientist's assistant who actually come in place of his boss, but maybe we discovered that he was posing as the boss halfway mm-hmm. through. Mm-hmm. The paranoid guy that's kind of neurotic, the old government connected guy. One of the things he wrote that made me laugh was he wrote the woman scientist. Yep, that's her whole character. I had said I was the one that had kind of steered this towards doing it with kids because I was a big fan of like The Goonies, Stand By Me, all those kind of ensemble kid adventure stories. Mm-hmm. This was back in 2005, so this was years before Stranger Things had come out. So I feel like I'm a little ahead of the curve on that mm-hmm. particular pop culture phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So I had been the one to pitch it, to do it as kids that are going to a science fair and mm-hmm. and instead of being abducted by some, you know, James Bond villain, they're abducted mm-hmm. as part of some nefarious scheme from the National Science Fair.
Mm-hmm. Now, why did you want to use kids or young adults as a kid?
I just thought that it could be a little bit more unique this way in terms of making it into like a story that we hadn't already seen before. I thought it would make it a little bit more fresh, and we could sort of some of the struggles and stuff, you know, the family struggles and stuff that the kids go through about, you know, trying to live up to the expectations of their parents. I wanted to explore some of those kind of themes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, this is the part one, The Prodigies, it's called. How many parts are in The Scientists?
For Kickstarter, I have decided to take this story and split it up into four parts.
Okay.
And each one is going to be about 44 to 48 pages long. So compared to a typical comic, it's like a double-length comic.
Wow.
So the whole thing, the whole book is about 180 pages, you know, and that's not counting all of the additional pinup art and back matter that I'll be including.
Mm-hmm. All right, when this is all done, you're going to put it into one volume?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I had originally thought that maybe I was just going to kickstart the whole thing as one big graphic novel. Mm-hmm. But I've been sort of studying how to do independent comic publishing from sort of a really smart group of people that are doing it on Kickstarter. We're networking with each other on Facebook and giving each other feedback and advice. And one of the things that I learned from this group was that you can not only use Kickstarter to raise the money that you need to get it printed or to get it drawn or whatever, but you can also use Kickstarter as just a platform to sort of amplify your message and build your audience. Mm-hmm. So if I were to do the very first Kickstarter out of the gate, my very first project as the whole enchilada, the whole graphic novel, mm-hmm. I'd be limited really to who I'm able to reach now, which is definitely not as many people as I hope I'll be able to reach after I've done a few of these.
It's interesting because one of the great things about Kickstarter is people will go through and try to find comics they want to buy on Kickstarter. Which is really something about that, because what that does is, like you're saying, you end up with a larger group than when you started, because people are looking for that, and you know your unique art and interesting story. But I always think that coming of age stories are compelling. So I was one of the things I liked about that. I liked about the fact that they were very different characters. About that. Now, did you guys develop that? You know, while Trent was involved, or did you expand on some of them afterwards? Because there's a girl who makes a volcano, and they ask, "What did you use for lava?" And she says, "Lava." She goes, "Like of course."
Yeah, that was all there in the script before the comic was drawn. So, I contributed, and a big amount of that character development credit definitely goes to Trent. Just to kind of show people just that these are very fully developed characters. I've been on social media. I've been posting character cards or I don't know what you call them. Yeah, I guess character cards. That's the best way to call them. Where I post a picture of the character, and then I provide like a little write up about each character. And as part of like a social media campaign that I'm calling Meet the Prodigies. I figured that would be if you know, one of the things that you kind of are forced to do when you're running a Kickstarter is you got to really beat the drum on social media and just be posting stuff about your Kickstarter every day. It's really, I've never been this active on social media in my life. It's really exhausting. But
you know, half the project is to get the word out.
I know it really is. So my thinking was that people would be bored of seeing, you know, me posting the main cover graphic every day and saying, you know, go to the Kickstarter. So instead, I figured they'd find it more interesting if I'm giving them, you know, details about each character, and they can learn about, you know, how Miles was called the Michelangelo of math. They can learn how Stuart has, you know, issues with his self-confidence. That Billy, you know, Groof came up from a wealthy family, and built his own airplane.
Which is interesting because this is going to be, obviously they're trying to go to a fair that they're all going to be involved in. But instead they've got to do real life things instead of just a fair. Now, I do want to mention, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a really big twist that happens about 12 pages in. Where there's a contest going on, and Stuart, what he does, he basically throws the contest so that Whitney, the girl that he likes, will win.
Yeah.
And then there's a big old twist that really surprised me, and I don't want to say what it is, but let's just say Stuart gets a reward for trying to be nice to her and trying to throw the contest. Which I was very surprised by. I really liked that. I've never seen that actually happen, but it would be nice. I'd like to see that happen. The kinds of things. I mean, where'd that come from? I mean, how did that...
And that I don't know if I necessarily agree that Stuart should have done what he did. I don't think he was doing anybody any favors by trying to do that. I think it was partially because he wanted Whitney to get the victory, but I think it was also just because he didn't really care about winning. That's something that's more important to his father. Right. To him, he does science just for its own sake. The fact that he had made a project is something that he would have done just for himself, with or without the science fair. And one of the things that's on the Kickstarter page, if you take a look through the rewards, I actually call attention to the part where Stuart didn't show his project, and I actually created the blueprint of what that project is.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, that's cool stuff. That's really neat. So, yeah, I like it when somebody has a story that well developed, and the whole thing happens along. I just think that's a great idea, because you've got to, you know, you've got to understand the little things that even that we don't see on screen to make things right. So I think that's pretty cool. I like that.
Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate it.
So, okay, as we stand right now, the Scientist's number one, Young Adventures, Young Adult Adventure, is part one is coming along, and let's see, it closes on April 10 at 11:59 p.m. EDT. So the last second of that Tuesday night will be when this closes. So based on the progress you have so far, and by the time this posts, I have a feeling you're going to be in good shape.
I certainly hope so. April 10th is also my birthday, so I figure, worst case scenario, I could just use the "it's my birthday" card.
That's right. That's right. Use that and say, "it's my birthday." Help support my Kickstarter.
It's my birthday. You don't want to disappoint me on my birthday.
Now, how's it going to be? You're going to print it? Is what you're going to? Because I see there's digital versions of it.
I'm doing a physical printing. Mm-hmm. I have. The main cover, which is which is not a drawn. That's actually a photograph of a diorama, and I did a little bit of a computer enhancement to add some color and some rain effect and stuff to it. But that's the main cover, mm-hmm. and then I have a variant cover, which is actually in anaglyphic 3D. And that's going to come with 3D glasses. Ooh. And since this is dropping late, and let's pretend that we've already hit the goal by the time this drops. So I'm not spoiling anything to say that for the stretch goal, I am going to do it as a rolling stretch goal where for every $50 we go beyond the target goal, I'm going to be converting a page of the comic into anaglyphic 3D. Ooh. So, you know, potentially we could get the entire comic converted.
Very good. Very good. Well, I do want to say that I find the story really compelling.
Thank you.
I really care about the characters. You know, I think each one of them is fleshed out. It's interesting to have in some ways your art style reminds me of Jeff Lemire when he draws. Have you ever read Jeff Lemire's art?
Yeah, I've read a few of his.
He did this book called Sweet Tooth that just, the end of Sweet Tooth is, if ever I'm in the mood for a sad comic, I pull out the very last part of Sweet Tooth. I don't know if you ever read that. It's so sad. I just sit there and when you're in the mood for such a thing like that. But the thing about his art style is interesting. It's because you remind me very much of him in that sense that, you know, make things happen. We get to understand the characters, you know, and I usually like a lot of detail in my stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm always surprised when something comes along like your artwork and it draws me in without tremendous amounts of detail. I'm always fascinated by that. But sometimes your mind, you know, if you're drawing it right, my mind will help fill in some of those details. And that's what your artwork does for me. It makes me say, okay, I think this is going to be here and this is going to be there, which, you know, I like it when my imagination gets engaged. I really like that a lot.
To me, for what I'm trying to do with the art, the most important thing is just trying to capture, like, the feelings and the emotion behind it. Mm-hmm. So making sure that, you know, just the way the characters are relating to each other, the expression that can kind of come across from like some of the gesture. I have sort of come to the conclusion that I could really work hard to try to make my art emulate the sort of the mainstream look that you see a lot of comics have, and a lot of people like that kind of thing. But the downside is that it almost becomes, in a way, interchangeable. Like, people could have their favorite comic, and, you know, as long as there's nothing distracting about it, you could switch artists, you know, from one good artist to another good artist. And to most people, nothing would be lost. They wouldn't really care. There wasn't necessarily anything that was making it stand out. So to me, I felt rather than trying to spend my time trying to, you know, make myself look like a more polished mainstream art, I would really lean into what made my art unique and really embrace it. And I feel that has kind of helped me stand out from the crowd. I fully appreciate that it's not going to be for everybody, but I think the people that do find it appealing are going to be more drawn to it.
Mm-hmm. See, the thing that for me is, I have a burning need for variety. Mm-hmm. I don't want everything to be the same. I want different things, different styles, different kinds of storytelling, because, you know, I've been reading comics a long time, and so for me to be able to find something like your book, The Scientist, is to find something that tickles that bone that needs to get something different. You know, likes to see something, engage different parts of my brain than the regular comic might. So that was one of the things I really enjoyed about it. I like the fact that it's something that it appeals to different parts of my perception that I don't always look at all the time. So I really like that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So, okay, Scientist number one, we're going to go with the assumption that you'll be able to make your goal, which I think is very doable at this point, and hopefully by the time this comes out, you have already gotten there.
We're sort of in that, every Kickstarter seems to follow the same pattern, where it's a strong start, then kind of a slow middle, and then hopefully a big finish.
Right. That's what you want. It's like eBay things. eBay sales usually go that way. Start out, there's a big bunch at the beginning, and then they stop. And then about two minutes before it's over, all of a sudden this flurry of things start to happen.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, you know, you'd much rather it be done sooner rather than later. So that you can, you know, you don't have to have what they call the daily heart attack. You don't want to have that every day looking, oh, no, nobody's bid on it yet. Oh, no. You want to get all that out of the way now, and then you can kind of worry about other stuff. You can start making plans, more concrete plans for.
Yeah, if we, you know, the sooner we hit that goal, the sooner I can start doing those 3D pages.
That's cool, very cool. Now, are you the thing I'm always interested to? You talked about social media and stuff like that. Do you have plans to go like to conventions with your book?
Well, as I mentioned before, I have 4 little kids and a wife.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's going to stop that. Okay.
It makes it hard for me to, you know, do anything that's going to take me away from my family for extended periods of time. Yeah. Just even going to the local conventions usually requires a bit of a negotiation between my wife and I. But I have, at least for this coming summer, made reservations at 2 of my local conventions. Okay. So places that are not going to require hour-long, you know, hours and hours of travel and hotel stays.
And are we there yet? Are we there yet kind of stuff?
Exactly. So these are one of them is a nice little con that is actually going on its second year. Mm. And I had a pretty successful debut showing just my preview copy, that the one that I have available as a free download on the Kickstarter.
Okay. And so that's one thing. So I got to ask, of course, which ones these are. Which conventions are you going to be at so people can plan if they want to come and talk with you?
Okay. I'm going to be at All-Star Comic Con this summer, and I'm also going to be at Fairfax Comic Con, and Fairfax Comic Con is actually currently running a Kickstarter right now. Shout out to them.
Oh, wow. Now, where are these located? I just don't happen to know where these are. Is this Virginia?
These are both in Northern Virginia. You're going to be looking for conventions in Northern Virginia this summer.
Okay, because there's a big convention coming in that region in D.C. called AwesomeCon.
Oh, okay, yeah. I've attended AwesomeCon in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't have plans to exhibit there, at least for this year.
Okay.
But I am hopeful to be – there's another convention that's sort of local to me called SPX that I'm hopeful to exhibit at. But that one is very popular in terms of everybody's competing for tables, so they do a lottery. So it remains to be seen whether or not I'll – get my name drawn for the table lottery.
Well, one of the things about conventions I always like is the fact that it starts to get the word out to people that you may not normally interact with. And let's face it, you got a whole building full of people that are more likely to be interested in what you want, which is what I like about conventions, because I think like a project like yours, I think could go over big time, especially if you're in like an indie area or something like that, or an indie con. That work out well. So yeah, well, you know, whatever you can do. I mean, you know, real life has gotta intrude in comics occasionally, and so you gotta be able to manage, you know, balance all that wonderful stuff between making comics and making children. And
That's true. So the kids come first.
Yeah, well, of course that's it. I just got to ask, I mean, any sign of your kids in the scientists, are they inspired? Did they inspire anybody, or are they?
Well, I had already written the scientists before they were born, but I think some of the art and the way I draw the art might be sort of definitely, I can't say it's not influenced by being a father. I think that impacts everything I do.
Mm. Very cool, very cool. So when do you think that the print copies will be started to get mailed out? I don't want to put you on the spot, but what are you figuring?
On my frequently asked questions page, I had done my best to estimate or guesstimate how long that was going to take. And it really depends on how soon I get it back from the printer. Okay. So if my estimation is that it'll take the printer about 4 weeks to print it, then I'll take about a week to pack it.
Right.
For some of the people, the backers are requesting that I do original art for them. So that might take another week or two. So I'm guessing that it could come up, it's going to be probably the classic 6 to 8 weeks after the campaign ends it'll ship out. And I hope it's as soon as possible, because I have a big backlog of comic pages already finished. I riffled through them in the campaign video on the Kickstarter page. It's as thick as a phone book. And I'm ready to put together issue 2. Wow. I might need a couple weeks to kind of
take a breath.
Recover.
Yeah.
From this before I launch on part 2, but you know, I really want to keep the ball rolling. I want people that backed part 1 to be able to get part 2 without having to wait super long time. And you know, the sooner I get part 2, the sooner I can get to part 3.
Right.
I still have to draw part 4, but
See, I don't know if you ever heard of the book called Rust. It's one of my very favorite books, and it's not a superhero book. It's about a boy robot that ends up in a farm with a son who's trying to get the farm together to honor his father.
By Royden Lepp.
Yes. That boy. Have you ever read that book?
I'm looking it up on the computer right now.
Oh, my gosh, I love that book. It's concluded. He had 4 volumes. They were all hardcovers. And, of course, he's putting soft covers out, too. I loved that book with a passion. I really did. That was one of those. And one of the things I got to ask him is something, of course, it's too soon for you to be able to answer. But what's it like now that he's finished with it?
I dream about what that will be like. to be able to say, oh, it's finally, my wife has been hearing me talk about this since as long as we've been married, and I think she's ready for me to move on to something new. I have stories that I want to tell, new stories, but I just can't really justify putting the time into it until I get the scientists out the door. So I want people to read it, and I have new stories I want to tell.
Very good, very good. And of course, I want to wrap up by saying that I pledged towards it already.
Thank you so much.
And I'm looking forward. You wrote this little scratch thing that I got a kick out of. It said, you know, acknowledged my pledge to the campaign. So I like all that good stuff. I think, Jeff, you're doing wonderful stuff. You're a man with many plates spinning on the top of the sticks, and you've got a lot to do. And, you know, I'm sure we can be patient and wait until you got everything together, manage both your family life and your creative comic life. So I think it's going to be wonderful. I think it's going to be a great book to read, and I highly recommend it. Again, go to Kickstarter. And what was the link you said was the best way to go?
Scientistscomic.com/Kickstarter.
Okay, and that'll get you right to the correct page. And make sure you pledge, and we'll all patiently wait until the Scientist #1 comes out before too long. And I can't wait to read it. I really like the pages that I got to see. It's something, like I said, something different always appeals to me. And that's what your, the story's interesting. I think that the artwork is really engaging. So I think you've got a winner on your hand there, Jeff. I think that The Scientist is going to be great.
Thank you so much, Wayne.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with yet another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics. They literally breathe to me. I know these people, you know, as I get to do them. And it's just a wonderful thing, the way that you've constructed this world with all kinds of things going on and all kinds of people and different aspects of it that I'm just gripped by. I'm just kind of fascinated to see what you guys are going to do next, which leads me to my next question. If somebody wants to get a hold of Nomad, how do they do that? You talked about it's available digitally. I saw you at a convention where I was able to get the paper copies. What's the best ways to do that?
Until we go through distribution, just go on Amazon and just buy a paperback copy from me, and you'll get it in 48 hours.
Okay.
So just Amazon, and then we keep our books in an Amazon warehouse, and they send them right out.
Oh, cool.
I highly recommend people doing that because I think that the first book takes some time to get into. It does. And but I think when we get to the end of it, like you described, I think there's a really cool revelation that makes you forge an emotional bond to the characters that makes you want to know more about them. Mm-hmm. And then I think when you get to the second story, because it takes place from the point of view of a young person, that makes it more relatable to more people. Mm-hmm. And what our young character goes through and how his father swoops in to lend a helping hand, mm-hmm. I think will make you forge an even closer bond with those characters. And I'm going to tell you, in that book, they go on one heck of an adventure together.
Oh, wow.
There are things that are going to happen that are going to hopefully blow people's mind.
Oh, cool. We already blew my mind several times in the other books, so I can't imagine what you got in store for us, what you want to do. You've got a website. It's nomadd.net.
That's us.
And are you on Facebook and other social media?
I am. Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, and I could use more Twitter followers. I don't really use the Twitter for much except, sharing art. And I try to stay off of social media because I think I love social media, but I try to not engage, to get things too inflamed or heated or things like that. So I try to just use it to share art.
Yeah, well, what you want to do is promote the comic. You don't want to, because there are some people I know who get out there and let's just say they spend hours and hours and hours on social media not talking about the comic and the stuff that they do. Well, that's what I really want to hear from people. I want to know what it is you're doing, and I want to be able to keep up with that good stuff.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how much the comic book community and the entertainment community in general uses social media to talk about everything except what's awesome about the stuff that they make?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's the thing I've learned from like just working with like Tom Orzechowski is it's like, why doesn't everybody go to Comic-Con and look for the letters? You know what I mean? Or it's like, why isn't there an enormous section at Comic-Con about maybe there are panels that do this, I don't know, but I mean, it's like, are that the industry desperately needs to remind people how freaking awesome it is, mm-hmm. and not how terrible and depressing and tyrannical the world can be.
Yep.
And I understand, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, like yep. heroes set the world right. That's what they do. If they're done well.
They give you hope.
Yeah, they give you hope, right. And it would be good to, you know, just, I don't know. To me, that's the spirit of it all,
yep.
you know.
Yep. Yep. Which is great stuff. Of course, now I got to ask, now that I've read the first volume of the three, when is volume two going to show up? Might we know?
Okay, so volume two shows up in July or August, and I'll mail you a copy of it.
Ooh.
So to stay in touch through Facebook, social media, or Hotmail, and mm-hmm. then we'll conclude the trilogy hopefully like in October or December, but we'll have everything ready for 2019. And then there's a Nomad's third adventure is being worked on as we speak.
Wow.
Then there's a fourth adventure, which is kind of a prequel, and it's going to take place from the point of view of a young heroine. And then there's going to be a fifth book, and the fifth book is sort of the epic finale of everything. So we've got five Nomad books, and I've got an arc, and I know where I want the character to go.
Very cool. Very cool. I'm looking forward to it because the great thing is you're going to have the third volume out before the holidays, which is a
yep.
perfect timing. I mean, you couldn't time that a lot better unless you had the trade out, you know, the collected version out. That would be nice to have. But on the other hand, I don't mind having the individual issues because I want to be able to read it. I'm one of those guys that I'm not much into collecting. I am much more into reading and enjoying the story. And that's what your book has done for me is taken me into a place I haven't been before. And I'm enjoying the story so much because it is something unusual that I haven't read before. And after decades of reading, whenever I can find that, I really just cherish it. It's terrific.
Well, if you are starting off and you want to ever tell a story, try to tell a story that is personal to you, that you're qualified to tell. And by qualified, I mean you have some biogeographic experience with the content. And then try to show somebody something they've never seen before, but like stick to your brand. You know what I mean? Like your brand is everything. Mm-hmm. I think, and I always say this to people, I say like, you know, your brand is the most important thing that you have as a storyteller. It's how people identify you on the competitive market. So even if your brand isn't that great, it's better to have a brand out there that people know who you are, because that puts you in a position to level up every year with that brand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And it's, so the name of the game is to get your brand, work it, and don't worry about making a bunch of money on it. Because if you structure things too carefully to make a ton of cash, it will probably fall flat.
Yeah.
Right. You know, unless you're already really well established.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, just tell your story from your heart, and, but don't let go of your story.
Yeah.
And don't let someone come in and say, hey, wouldn't it be great if this character was a, you know, an astronaut from Detroit. I mean, I think if someone had come to James O'Barr and been like, yo, man, I love The Crow is so great. But have you ever thought about making it, you know, about a Vampire Academy? And you know what I mean? It's like, what would James O'Barr have done in that situation? You would have destroyed his soul, destroyed his story, and we would have never had this epic masterpiece that's withstood the test of time.
See, one of the things about your book I know is I can tell you know where you're going.
Yeah.
A good writer knows where they're going, and when we read that, we can tell that you know where you're going. And that's why we can trust you and go along with the story and read and enjoy it. Because I honestly, there are some books I read and I don't think they know where they're going, and I'm pretty convinced I don't know where we're going.
Well, you know, I got a lot of help. I got a lot of help with story with a company called Scenario that's down in Los Angeles, California. And it's run by a gentleman who is he packages story for major motion pictures. And so just a little bit of backstory behind that. When you create something, what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a position to get in the room to make it stronger,
mm-hmm.
right? You know what I'm saying? Yep. Like, not making it to be perfect. You're making it to put yourself in a position to have the network where you can go a bit higher with it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I met the gentleman who runs this company, and he reached out to me and said, you know, I would love to give you some information about some ways that you can structure your ideas that will, and it's story structure. That's what it is, right? It's the fundamental principles of story structure,
right,
which if you stick to too rigidly, I think you can mess your story up. But if you know what they are and you can play with them, you can make your story stronger. And so he came in and he really, really spent several years helping me understand myself, my story a little bit better. And so like what you're saying about being able to feel that the writer has some idea to know where they're going, that was just because I got some help by some people who are really smart. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing of it is, though, they're helping you tell your story, though. You still had your story.
Exactly.
As far as I'm convinced. But, yeah, you know, as I would just say, they helped you bring that and you made it better. Which is, you can always make things a little better and you can always make things a little stronger. And I got that sense when I read these books, is that it's just a strong storytelling going, I don't know where you're going, but I know I want to read it. So I'm looking forward to this in the future.
Are you guys going to be able to do a written review of the work at all?
I'm going to try to do that. I am way behind on my review writings. I've been going to, I was out in Seattle, we're going to a lot of different conventions. I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. I'm going to go to Dallas and stuff, and I can barely do the work and stuff, but I'm going to try to get a review written about it so I can get it out there, because when I find something really good, I really want to make sure people know about it. And so that, like with your book, I think we should do that. Now, I do have one more question I want to ask. You were at Emerald City. Are there other appearances you're going to do that people can come and see you?
Oh, yeah. Come find us at WonderCon this weekend in Anaheim. We fly out tomorrow, booth 1223. And then we'll be at Chicago, C2E2, at booth 708. And then we'll do Rose City, Baltimore, New York City, and Stanley's Kamikaze to end the year.
Wow, so I'm going to probably bump into you a couple more times.
Please do.
I'm going to go to Baltimore and all those good kind of things. Well, Drew, you're doing just wonderful stuff, and I let your team know, too, that everybody is just making this book really sparkle. And so, to me, I just can't wait to see what you're going to do next, which is, you know, not many comics do that to me, but yours does.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.